And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, the drive toward an authoritarian state in the United States continues without let up. The government is still shut down. Trump started shutting it down the minute he signed into his office second term in January. And it accelerated greatly about 4 weeks ago when the legislature suddenly disbanded and went home because the Republican leadership sent it home.
Well, that was the House.
That was the House. That's right. Not the Senate, but the House. But that's a part of the legislature.
Yes.
So what do you make of this trend? What do you make of what's going on? What do you make of any attempt to counteract it?
Well, it's a war on at least three fronts in government and a fourth front out in the public. The fourth front being protests like the No Kings protests this weekend. But the government, we have the executive. We started with DOGE, firing people, and then, of course, realizing, wait a minute, we may need some of them, and getting some of them called back and whatever, but really hurting the operation of government. By the way, that's the way the Republicans have operated for a long time. They don't fund various agencies or areas, and then they complain that they don't function right.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, as if they had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
But we had the executive doing things, and then we had the legislature, basically the Republican legislature, because they control both the House and the Senate, doing nothing. And now, of course, the problem is with the House. They're not even in session. They haven't been in session because the speaker does not want to swear in the newest elected member, the Grijalva woman from Arizona, because as soon as she is sworn in, she will sign the discharge petition, which requires a vote on the Epstein files. And that would embarrass the president because obviously there's something in those files that he doesn't want out. Although he ginned up MAGA for years about the Epstein files, and his attorney general promised to release them, and they were on her desk, and they would, she just had to go through and redact victims' names or whatever. So the legislature is non-functional. And then we have the Supreme Court, which up to now has essentially rubber stamped any moves that the executive has done to undermine the rule of law or underline rules about hiring and firing people. And, this week they're out there undermining the Voting Rights Act. And it's a full court press, and you combine that with Trump using the IRS. He wants to use the IRS to defund any organization that provides opposition to him. And also he's weaponized the Justice Department. This week they the third shoe dropped, and they indicted John Bolton at the behest of the president. Meanwhile, their other indictments seem to be somewhat troubled and may not even last. The indictments of Letitia James and James Comey. So it's an all-out, a war on all fronts, and that's basically what they want. They want to, spread the opposition so thin that they can't coalesce.
Well, that's what Project 2025 calls upon them to do. And that's what Stephen Miller said, but during the election, before Trump won, he said, our plan is to flood the zone so that the opposition lawyers won't know what hit them and they won't be able to regroup. That's their plan.
Yeah, and
that's not Bannon, an accident. That's it.
No, the that was the Bannon idea.
Yeah,
flooding the zone.
Yeah,
and they went after, you know. And I'm writing an article about this. They want to divide and conquer, and they took their opportunities when an opening appeared. They went after large institutions, the law firms and universities, and. And instead of these groups, you know, getting together and standing up to them, they and the media, by the way, was the other group they went after. They all, you know, took what they thought was the easy way out and cut deals. Although there were a lot of conflicts of interest by, for instance, the Paramount deal to be sold. So they, you know, they wanted to really reorganize CBS News and stuff like that. Trying to keep all these things straight is tremendously difficult. Although now we're starting to see regrouping occurring. Like I said, the No Kings rally is one, but the universities this week refused to sign these agreements that the to, in effect, turn over their governance to the Trump administration on things like
and that's
hiring.
What it amounts to. That's exactly what it amounts to. Turn over running the universities to the government, right?
Right. And then we had also the press rebelling against the Defense Department,
right?
Which said that you can only work under our rule, our agreement. You know, essentially, you can't report on anything.
Right,
that we're doing that may not be legit, right. And all of the major news organizations, all of them, said we're not operating under that. We're walking, you know, we'll mm-hmm. walk mm-hmm. rather than just be puppets, except for OAN.
Right.
But and that included Fox, which mm-hmm. is really interesting because the Secretary of Defense, we're still not calling him the Secretary of War because officially. The Department of Defense hasn't changed its name. He's a Fox man. He came from Fox.
Yeah. Well, what I want to point out is that in the government, in the, so far as the government exists, in so far as the government is supposed to be the public power, there's a two-pronged attack. One is the case before the Supreme Court on the Voting Rights Act,
right.
Which has to do with, is it constitutional to set up districts with majority minorities? In other words, where you have an area where you have an enormous preponderance of people from Latin America or African American people, should the district be drawn in such a way that that majority can actually elect an African American or Hispanic American, or should it be drawn in such a way that they could never get elected because them, you know, acknowledged anti-black or anti-Hispanic people are put in the majority? And Kavanaugh said that the Voting Rights Act says, no, you can draw up majority-minority districts. And that's been what's happened for, what, the last 40-some-odd years, 50-some-odd years. But the government, the Supreme Court now, is going to say that this is unconstitutional. And if that's the case, that would mean, everybody who analyzes these things, 19 seats will flip from Democrat to Republican. 19.
And in, you know, in Florida, Louisiana, North Carolina, all of these places.
That's right. So that's one thing. The second thing is that's important is that the government, the administration, has adopted a policy, an economic policy of directly taking over control of large corporations. Now, the hallmark of fascist economy is that you maintain private enterprise, you maintain the private ownership of the factories, you allow the investment banks to continue, but they are subordinated to government control, a government program, a government plan. But you guarantee their profits, so that and that those profits are private, and that's precisely what Trump's economic maneuvering is all about. They're taking controlling interests in key industries. And they've already done it with two companies that make chips. Sure. They did it with a steel company, U.S. Steel. They're doing it across the board. So we have the fascism, I don't know how you would say this, but the
fascization,
the fascist model of an economic system to go along with the abolition of a popular legislature, in fact.
And this is from the party that's the Free Market Party.
This is the Free Market Party. That's right. But it's no longer the Free Market Party.
No.
The fascists are openly against the free market. Right.
It's the party of power rules, not economics.
Yeah, that's right. It's the big business unfettered party. That's what it is. Yeah. And in America, as it was in Nazi Germany, as it is in India, as it is in wherever they do this, it's based on some form of racism. Racism underlies it because the enemy, because there's got to be an enemy since there's always, because sure. None of this eliminates the real social problems. So therefore somebody's causing them. So the enemy is whoever is the racial or national minority, whether it's Jews or Muslims or Catholics or whoever it might be.
Hispanic.
With us, it'll be blacks and Hispanics. Exactly. So the march to fascism continues. It continues. And I would say the ennoblization of corruption continues with George Santos commutation this week, at the end of the week. Like, was there anyone who was more a poster child of corruption, political and economic corruption, than this guy Santos? He drips with corruption, and Trump pardoned him. Why? Because he supported MAGA. That's what Trump said.
And he pardoned him because he's sending a signal.
Yes.
To people that corruption will be rewarded as long as you're with me.
Exactly. It's not corrupt if you're with me, or it doesn't matter if you're with me.
If you're right. You know, and the getting back to the Voter Rights Act, the question, and they're using this artificial. Essentially, they're using alternate facts. Previously, John Roberts' life work has been to diminish the voting power of minorities, particularly blacks. He has worked at that for decades. And the first shot he got was the one with the Article 5 in it, and where he just created this fiction that there's no more discrimination in America. There's no more racism, so we don't need this. Even though the act itself, if you're a strict constructionist, doesn't have an expiration date. Okay. They're doing this again, Justice Kavanaugh, with Article 2 of the Voter Rights Act, where his questioning was, well, isn't it time? It's been over 60 years that we declared discrimination over. In essence, the answer to that should have been the need for anti-discrimination laws is over when we stop having discrimination, and we haven't done that. You can declare certain things. The president can declare certain things.
But they've put the definition of discrimination upside down.
Yeah.
They've managed to figure out that the powerless minority is capable of discriminating against the powerful majority.
Right.
How does that work? How do you do that? I'd like to do it.
Yeah. Well, it's always a lose-lose. In other words, there's discrimination against minorities. They can't get jobs. They can't get housing, whatever. And then you pass a law that gives them the power to get jobs. And they say, no, that's discriminatory against those people who haven't been discriminated against in the past.
Right.
It's a neat trick. We're waiting, with the Supreme Court again will declare things once Donald Trump invokes the Insurrection Act, which
now
he's
you're
preparing to do.
Now you're getting to be something different, right? I mean, that already makes it all legal.
Yes, because that act will trump, to use a word, any of the other acts or powers that are even the Constitution at that point, because it says that if the president declares an insurrection, or if there's an insurrection, the president has all these, in effect, martial law powers.
And the president has the right to decide if there's an insurrection, and it can't be decided, it can't be overruled by the courts, and it can't be overruled by the legislature.
That's the thing. That's the thing. The lower courts up until now have been ruling against the Trump administration on firings and other things. The Supreme Court has been kind of upholding that. The theory that that is now being put forward is what you just alluded to, where Stephen Miller says that neither the courts nor the legislature even has the power to review the president's declaration. If the president says there's an insurrection, whether there is or not.
Right.
If he says those two people walking down the street yelling, you know, Trump is an idiot, is an insurrection, it becomes an insurrection.
Right.
And that's going to be the, for want, you know, the pun again, the supreme test, whether the Supreme Court says we do have the power to review it. The only thing is if they review it, they may just punt anyway, or whether that's the bridge too far. And that's where everything is going to wind up resting on that. You know, if I were arguing that in front of the Supreme Court, I'd be using the argument that Abe Lincoln used to use in that little joke he used to tell. You know, he'd go around asking people, how many legs does a horse have if you count the tail as a leg? Do you remember that one?
No.
Yeah, he used to say that. And people would say, well, five. He said, nope, it's four, because calling a tail a leg doesn't make it a leg. And, you know, that's what I would use. You know, of course, the Supreme Court, you know, they have the history of declaring tomato to being a vegetable when it's a botanical fruit. So,
And by the way, along these lines, the purge of the military continues. It's not just on their face ridiculous things like calling the Defense Department the War Department. It's the actual purge of generals and admirals, in line with what Hegseth said in his speech the other Tuesday. If you don't agree with what we're doing, have the honor to resign. And this week, the admiral who heads the Southern Command resigned. Now, there's two interesting things about that resignation. First of all, the admiral is black. So it's another one of the, in a now long line of African-American and
women
top commanders who've been cast out of the armed services for some reason or another. Top guys. That's number one. Number two about him is apparently he opposed these illegal bombings of these so-called Venezuelan boats in international waters. He was against doing it. He said, you should not do this. It's illegal. And he was forced out, according to the reporting in the Washington Post, because of that. So that continues. This purge continues. So you're purging industry, you're purging the courts, you're purging the legislature, you're purging the military, you're preparing for the Insurrection Act. That is exactly what we're looking at. Now, I don't want to sound overly pessimistic. That's what they want to do. What can we do in response? Now, we're speaking now before the No Kings demonstration, which is due to take place in a couple of hours after we finish this recording. And presumably there'll be at least 5 million people, because that's what was present a couple of months ago. And now there's more cities and there's more anger. So we know there'll be at least 5 million people and maybe 6, 7, 8 million people on the streets in 2,500 to 3,000 different cities and towns throughout the country demonstrating against this. But then what? Then what?
Well, this is driving the Republicans crazy. I mean, Ted Cruz is out there yelling about this is communist George Soros, that these folks are not patriotic. In fact, this is the most patriotic form of activity that a citizen can do. That is protest government action when they feel it's wrong, as long as it's peaceful. That type of thing.
Don't get too far afield. Don't forget the Boston Tea Party.
I was just going there. Yeah, that wasn't quite as peaceful. Right. But yeah, I mean, this is where we start. You know, what would Ted Cruz have said about the Boston Tea Party?
Right.
You know, that was John Hancock, you know, instead of George Soros type of thing. But again, they're turning things upside down, redefining patriotism, or finding away patriotism. I don't know which way you want to do that. One thing I want to go back to before we leave is you mentioned the Supreme Court. There's a report this week that the Vatican, the Pope, the American Pope, is preparing to, I don't know the exact theological term, but disband or decertify Opus Dei as an organization within the Catholic Church, which would be something considering that a number of the Supreme Court justices come from that end of Catholicism, and as well as other movers and shakers in the United States.
Can you explain what Opus Dei is?
It's a very right-wing branch of Catholicism that in essence devotes itself to power and very rigid conservatives ideas, nothing progressive about it in their beliefs. It's in some ways a reaction to Vatican II, and that there's always
well,
been that.
Well, it was actually founded in 1928.
Well,
it's been around a long time, and it got its real big start in the Franco-fascist dictatorship of Spain. They really controlled Spain during the Franco years. Yeah, it is the Catholic version of Christian nationalism in America, if you really want to make an allusion to it. It's a belief that the most reactionary elements of Catholic theology should dominate cultural, economic, and political life across the board. It's making makes a model of the Spanish Inquisition, so to speak.
Yeah, and to the extent that a Pope does things that are not in concert with their ideas, the Pope is wrong on Catholic theology.
Right, right, right.
So, as I said, they got a lot of boost after Vatican II and the reaction to that.
Mm-hmm.
But even though the roots, as you said, go far deeper, we'll have to see if that comes to pass. Should we talk anything about some of the local things that are happening?
I think so, because the local things that are happening are really local reflections of the national things that are happening.
Yeah. The Democrats.
We have the same weakness in the Democrat. I mean, the weakness of the Democratic Party in responding to this drive to the fascist reorganization of the country is mirrored by the total incapacity of the local Democrats to get their asses together.
Yeah. And the rift in Lackawanna County has grown tremendously. We have the county commissioner Bill Gaughan versus the county chairman
Chris Patrick.
Yeah, and also State Senator Marty Flynn. Chris Patrick and Marty Flynn are more or less the old school, the old buddy system, and the reason the party exists is to hire your friends and give contracts out to your buddies.
Which is the Trump approach to the Republican Party.
Yeah. And the county Democrats had had elected two people as commissioners that were opposed to that, but then one of them resigned, and replacing him has become the real test. In the first instance, the county chairman tried to appoint, suggested to the court that they needed to appoint one of his favorites, someone who had worked for the county and been fired. And then the county commissioner said, no, we should have an election. And the courts stepped in and voided the appointment pending the election. And now we have two candidates going at each other. One of the old school, Tom Welby, who actually had replaced Marty Flynn in the state legislature as an interim. And Bill Gaughan had gotten an independent person, really a Democrat, by the name of Mike Cappellini. And so they're going at it, hammer and tong, and we'll see which one emerges. If Cappellini wins, you're going to see the reformation continue. If Tom Welby wins, it's going to really be the old school again.
But the real mark of shame against these Democrats is the clerk of court, or the recorder's clerk election, right? I mean, that's the one that really reeks to high heaven.
Right. The same thing occurred. There was a vacancy, and Democrats have named a woman who was MAGA, who was at the January 6th rally, not inside the Capitol, but she was there. They made a deal. Chris Patrick and Marty Flynn made a deal with Mike Brace, who's kind of, he's a judge, but he does a lot behind the scenes in Republican politics. And the Democrats wanted, Reform Democrats wanted Colleen Egan Garrity. So she decided to run on her own against the party pick. And that's an interesting contest as well.
This kind of stuff occupies the Democratic Party. Then figuring out how to oppose Trump, how to win over the middle elements, how to oppose the diehard elements of MAGA, doesn't concern them.
No.
And if they're the ones who have to lead the opposition is doomed.
And then, you know, on a statewide level, we have opposition to John Fetterman, Senator.
Yes. Who voted with the Republicans to keep the government open.
Keep the government open.
Yeah.
He's broken with a lot of the people in the party on a number of things. On the other hand, he was pretty loyal to Biden on every judicial appointment he voted for. But he charts his own course and his own style. So
he's up for re-election when?
2028. But there's going to be they're plotting. So three names have appeared. We'll see what happens there.
All right, we're done for this week. Hopefully, we'll be able to be on the air many more times, despite what the Trump people want to do.
And Ted Cruz, whatever he'll call us, for going to that rally.
Right. So be careful how you riot when you go to the rally. Riot peacefully and calmly. And we'll see you next week.
We will see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.